This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And this is Alice Jovich from Arlington, Texas. You are listening to a special trail riding episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for December 18th, episode 1065. This episode is brought to you by the North American Trail Ride Conference. Good morning, Horse World.
Thursday. I'm so happy it's Thursday.
Just an ordinary day.
If you love to ride horses, but you'd rather ride on a trail than in an arena, I think I know a sport just for you.
We're out. We're getting to the first mark. We're a little ahead of time.
Expect nothing less than full-blown chaos.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday morning. 1 week until Christmas. You have 6 days to shop, people, which means I have 2 days to shop because I always wait till about Tuesday. So, I reduce my stress by not having to think about it till 2 days before Christmas. Everybody else is stressed for months before Christmas. I only get stressed for 2 days. See? It's perfect. Alice, are you one of those pre-shoppers? Do you shop like months in advance?
I'm done. I've been done for a while.
See, and all that stress you put yourself through, I just condense it down.
Oh, I wasn't stressed. I just be like, oh, that would be good for so-and-so. And I just sort of buy stuff as I go. And then when I don't have any more money, I decide to stop shopping.
You
so
stop.
A good idea does not present itself for your Aunt Matilda. She might not get anything because she'll be at the
bottom. That's right. She was late in the list.
I like that.
I make most of my presents anyway. So, I mean, I crocheted a lot of things this year, but in the past I've sewn, and I have an embroidery machine, so I've done stuff on my embroidery machine. So I typically do a lot of homemade presents, and I only buy stuff for people that I run out of time to make things for. Or, like I said, the thing with, like this year we bought a lot of T-shirts from it's from lolshirts.com. They just have a lot of funny saying shirts, and we went through the site and picked out all the shirts we thought sounded like people we knew.
So, there you go. That's a good idea.
It was easy.
That's a good idea. Actually, I would have to do that more than 2 days in advance, so I'd have to get on that. What is it, LOL? What is it again?
lolshirts.com.
Oh, wow. Well, when you two take over the rest of the show, I'm going to go shopping while we while you talk.
Well, one of the shirts that I already know what my daughter bought me. She thought it's a picture of a person at the top of a food pyramid that I didn't claw my way to the top of the food chain to eat vegetables for the rest of my life. You know, and there's one that says, sometimes, of course I talk to myself, sometimes I need expert advice.
You know, I like this one. I'm on the site now. I'm doomed for the rest of the show. I'm sorry for what I said when I was hungry. And
yeah.
That'd be me. That'd be me.
Yeah, that would be my daughter, too. Yeah. So. Yeah,
well,
yeah, and then there's the website.
We have a fun trail ride show planned for you today, and Jennifer's going to tell us what's coming up.
On today's NATRC Trail Ride episode, we've got a warm-up list of ways to stay warm while enjoying your horse time. And next up, we will have the Congregation of Acronyms, as Christy Landwehr from the CHA stops by to chat about the NATRC winning the Safety Partnership Award. Woo-hoo! And then rounding out the show, Mary Ashley McKibbins covers the basics of the coolest gated horse out there, the Icelandic. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Alice, I'm going to put you on hold because we can barely hear here. So we'll let her deal with the dogs, and I will do a daily winning next. Well, my daily winnie goes out to, again, for the second day in a row, I think, to Charlotte Desjardins and Vallegro, who set another world record. And Jennifer, this is an incredible freestyle world record with 94.3%. Now, keep in mind, 100% is the tops you can do. And they did a 94.3%, which breaks the previous mark of 92%. So 94.3, wow. We're only 5% away from perfect scores. Of course, there were a lot of tens in that, you would imagine. And to give you an idea, in 2009, remember we were talking about how Totalus did the freestyle at the same show and broke a world's record? That score, Jennifer, in 5 years, went up 10%. So Totalus won it with an 83.5 in 2009, and now we have Charlotte and Vallegro with a 94.3. I haven't had a chance to watch the video yet, but I'm definitely going to be doing that, and I'm sure everybody else will too. I'll post a link to the video in the show notes so you can take a look at it, but I'm sure it's incredible.
Isn't that funny that it's going to be interesting to see if it swings back at some point. The same thing happened in the gymnastics world a number of years ago where the scores went crazy and then it seemed to balance itself way back again, because what happens when everybody starts getting 90-somethings, right?
Yeah, but she's the only one so far. I mean, that's the thing is she, you know, there haven't been a whole lot that have crossed that threshold. I think it's just an incredible combination of horse and rider here. And she said that she was quoted as saying towards the end of the test, I guess she had only a couple of moves left. She said, I almost broke into tears because the horse was just trying so hard for me. And apparently a couple of the last movements are his most difficult. And she said he was just giving it his all. And she said, I just knew that he was nailing it. So, and remember yesterday, her quote was before the Grand Prix was, you know, I'm not feeling that well. I'm just going to go out and have some fun.
Yeah.
You know,
have some fun.
You sometimes perform better, though, when I know that, like, some of my better flute performances were when I was tired or it was, like, the last thing I had to do and I just wanted to go home for vacation, you know, and I'd go in and play that last jury and I was just like, I just don't care. And sometimes when you just don't try as hard, sometimes you end up just letting it flow better.
Well, and she went into this whole weekend, to this whole competition, thinking it was just going to be the first time really riding back since the World Equestrian Games. And she said, you know, I'm just going to go in and, you know, give the horse a practice session. She was basically looking at it like a practice session. Well, she did. She did. 2 world records. That's a hell of a practice session. So congratulations to her. Good job. We're going to be talking about a lot of different things, but what's been up with you since we talked to you last? I know it's not exactly trail ride season, but a lot of people go out anyway.
Oh, no, in Texas, it's a great time to trail ride because most of the time, you know, we have these little cold breaks. Like right now, it's rainy and chilly, but over the weekend, it was pretty pleasant. And, you know, in Texas, I mean, it's probably like in Florida, too. You know, we get little cold spells, but the weather's pretty decent most of the time. So it just seems like it's always bad on the weekends when you have time to ride, and it's nice during the week when you're at work. Seems like the weather patterns just play against you sometimes. But I haven't been riding much. I had given my horse a break, and then I just started back riding him again the last week or two. But we have a competition January 2nd at 7IL, so I decided I'd better start riding some more, or he was going to be mad at me after I rode for 40 miles.
Anyway, so you do have competitions then in the winter there in Texas?
We do. We usually have a competition in December, but this year it got canceled due to the ranch where we have it was having trouble with they have a gas pipeline there, and the gas people were going to be working during the winter, and the trails were going to be torn up, and they were worried about liability of all the big trucks coming in and out. So that got put on hold, and so somebody else decided to do one in January. 7IL usually has, but Marjorie was on last month to talk about the ride, but usually there's an endurance ride there between Christmas and New Year's, and he decided to take the year off from that, and so she picked up the opportunity to have an NATRC ride at the ranch this year. So, and it's a good place because it's pretty far south, and it's always windy there, but it might be 85 degrees. One of my friends said she wasn't sure she wanted to go because it'll be cold. And I was like, it might not be cold. I mean, it could be, but it might just as easily be 80. You just never know. So, and they have hot showers. So even if you get cold, you can go take a hot shower.
Well, I know that you know, a lot of people do. Like, we used to, you know, we lived in Pennsylvania. We used to take the carriage out in the snow, and Jennifer used to love to go trail riding in the snow, although I think she loves it better now that she can trail ride every day with 70 degrees. But, we did, it was pretty to go out in the snow occasionally, and you know, it was pretty to do that occasionally, but then you still had to deal with the frozen water buckets and all the crap every day. So there was that. But what you have some tips for us, I think, about being comfortable while camping and, you know, going out for trail rides in the winter.
I do. The first is to wear layers, because when you first start out, you're going to be cold. But as you ride, you're going to get warmer. So if you start with just your heaviest clothes, and you can't strip down a little bit, you're going to end up being too warm. And so, like, what I personally do, I was like, well, you have these numbered shirts that we wear for competition, but I'll wear like a long sleeve one and a short sleeve one, and then maybe pull my sweatshirt over it. And so then as I get warmed up, I can pull off the sweatshirt. And the same kind of goes for your horse too. Typically when we're competing, a lot of us will have a rump rug that we leave rolled up behind the saddle, or maybe we'll start with the rump rug on the horse if the horse doesn't mind it being there. But mostly we will roll those out for the PNRs. So that while they're standing around, because like you're warm while you're moving, but then you get cold when you're not moving, we'll put the rump rug over the horse's rump so that they don't cramp up while they're standing around. So, and it's always a good idea when you're trail riding to take a small waterproof container or Ziploc bag with you that has matches. And this is more of a tip if you're just riding for fun, but like have matches and a space blanket so that if you were to get stuck out, you have something to cover up with until help arrives. You could need to make a fire for yourself. I mean, typically I know the places I ride in the winter, that's not a problem, but if you were going to be out away somewhere, this would be something to keep on your person if you could, like in a fanny pack, because if you parted ways with your horse, you'd want to be able to cover up if your horse left you and you were stuck somewhere. The space blankets are so little, you can just pack them in your fanny pack and, you know, they don't take up too much room, but they really do a good job at keeping you warm. They're also good if you're camping to lay on the ground under your mattress or especially if it's an air mattress, because air mattresses get so cold when you're camping. So if you can lay a space blanket.
They're the worst.
If you could put one or even between yourself and the air mattress, you'll be a whole lot warmer. It's a little weird because they're crinkly, but it makes a huge difference if you're sleeping on an air mattress to keeping warm. And be sure before you warm your horse up a little more than you would if it were warm outside. You need groom your horse really well to get the blood flowing to the muscles. And also because they have a thicker coat, if you don't give them a good brushing, you have a lot more grunge that can get between the horse and the saddle, and they have the potential to have more sores from the dirt that's in their coat. So if you have snow on the ground, be sure and check the horse's feet really well, especially if the horse is shod, because ice and snow can get trapped in between the horse's hooves. And then it's just like the horse is skating. And you know how it feels to a person when you step out on your porch and you didn't realize it was going to be icy, that whole, you know, feeling of skateboarding across life. Think about your horse doing that on 4 feet and no hands to stop him from falling. It's just, speaking of cold, I have a dachshund that keeps trying to get in my lap. So she's freezing. She thinks she's freezing.
Well, I think that's the way dachshunds are, aren't they? They're always cold or hot.
Yeah. So plan some extra time to cool your horse down after a ride. In the winter, you know, if your horse has its full coat, there's going to be a lot of moisture under the coat that you may not notice. If you're not turning the horse back out right away and you have time to throw a cooler over him, and let him dry at the trailer a little bit, or like walk back in so that he's mostly cooled off by the time you arrive back at your trailer. That's ideal. Or like, and if they're at all damp, you know, do something when you put them in the trailer to drive home to keep them warm for the drive home, because if it's at all cold, driving down the road with, like, my trailer is a stock trailer, I just can imagine how chilly it is back there with the wind blowing on them. And if they're clipped, they definitely are going to have a blanket, because, you know, after they've gotten warm from being worked, they're going to cool off a lot more rapidly, and that's going to be uncomfortable for the horse.
Yeah, and you need to pay attention about what kind of blanket you might put on them, because not all blankets are created the same.
That's right. And sometimes you want to layer your blankets. Like, you might want to put, like, I know at a competition, sometimes I'll put on, of course, my horse is cooler, and sometimes I'll go ahead and put another blanket over the top of it, because, like, my regular turnout blanket doesn't have wool on the backside. So I'll put the wool cooler on, and then I'll loosely put my regular blanket over the top, and I'll check underneath to make sure they're not too hot, or, you know, or just while they're drying, because the wool or the polar fleece will help pull the moisture out of their coat. If I put just the plain, like my plain turnout blanket, back on over the wet horse, they don't dry off near as fast. I wouldn't turn them out with the cooler. I mean, I just do that if I'm at the trailer.
Right.
Because those coolers get beat up pretty easy.
So yeah, they'll tear too.
Yeah, I have a nice one that my horse won one year, and he stepped on it and ripped the whole side panel in one fell swoop. So, if you are riding in insulated boots, like warm boots, make sure they're not too wide for your stirrups. You may need wider stirrups in the wintertime. I know that I use those mountain horse boots quite a bit. They're super warm and they're waterproof, the ones that have the Velcro up the back. And it's great because if you have to walk through something, you're not going to get your feet wet, because having wet feet just makes you so cold. But you need to make sure that you can get your feet in and out of the stirrups. Because if you don't, you could get yourself into a wreck if your foot got hung up. And that's a real problem. Let's see, take time to stretch and warm up your muscles before climbing into the saddle, and give your horse plenty of time to warm up before you start to be just a strenuous riding. I know that typically we'll say, you know, you walk the first mile and you in and out, if not longer. And a lot of our trail horses kind of get used to that. And I know my horse, like, we'll start out walking and it's like he magically knows when he's ready, because he'll just go ahead and, you know, be ready to pick up the trot. If I ask him to go before he's ready, he'll just be like, no, I haven't walked my mile yet. So make sure that when you're riding in the cold, that even though, you know, it's not as, like, water in hot weather is important, but you still need to get them water on the trail when it's cold. So, you know, still pick a trail to ride that has water, because with it being colder, they're probably drinking less anyway. And you could, if you have a strenuous ride and they haven't had enough to drink, you could be putting your horse at risk for colic.
And that goes for the rider, too. I know a certain wife of mine who doesn't drink enough, and especially when it gets chillier, she doesn't even think about bringing water along on a ride.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
I can
make
for a couple of hours without drinking anything. Really, I can, Glenn.
I know. See? I see.
You should, though. I usually wear a Camelback. I have a Camelback, you know, a hydration pack, and I'm used to wearing it now, and you drink so much more when you're wearing it, because the tube is just right there, and you just kind of pop it in your mouth and sip leisurely, and you don't think about drinking as much, but you'll end up drinking, you know, 2 or 3 liters of water without even paying too much attention. And that's better. You know, it's
right,
better
right.
Not to. And one of the tips is, like, when you're freezing and you want to get back off the trail, but, you know, you've got a ways to go, to visualize that it's warm outside. Think about how, when it's hot, how miserable you are, and how we'd be complaining about it being too hot if we weren't too cold.
And that's true. That's so true.
So, I know, Glenn, you had a few tips of your own. What were
Jennifer had put these together. Jennifer, do you want to jump in here?
Well, I got to thinking about that and spent a lot of years riding in the cold. And one of the things that I discovered the hard way is when all these really nifty new neoprene-lined boots and neoprene gloves to keep your hands dry came out, frequently I would put them on and go, these things don't work. They suck. Well, apparently, especially with neoprene, they don't transfer the heat or cold very well, which is why they work. But if they start out cold, they stay cold. So a lot of us keep our boots and gloves and hats in a porch or in the tack room in the barn or somewhere else really chilly. Not a good idea. Put your warm weather, your cold weather gear inside the house where they're warm when you put them on. Otherwise, all you're doing is putting on cold gloves and making your hands cold. So it kind of stinks.
I never would have thought about that, but that makes sense.
Yeah. I came across that somewhere. Somebody who did a lot of hiking said, oh, well, duh, you have to have the boots warm to begin with. And oh, okay, that makes sense. One of the things I do down here in Florida is I have a fleece seat cover for my saddle because hot and sweaty, ew, yuck, and the fleece allows things to breathe a little bit, but it also works to keep your butt warm.
Yeah, but if you're riding in the rain, you have to cover up your fleece seat cover with something if you dismount.
Or it's a great big sponge.
It's a great big sponge, yeah.
There's nothing worse than getting back in the saddle after the PNR where it's been cold and wet, and then you sit down on that fleece cover, and it's just like, ew, you're cold and wet. We usually just take a trash bag and throw it over the saddle.
Well, you know how they have the automatic convertible for your car? You just press a little button and the little convertible opens and closes.
Yeah.
A little automatic thing for your saddle.
Well, I used to make rump rugs for myself and for other people, and I never actually made this one, but I always thought that it would be cool to have like a second part to my rump rug because I tied it behind the saddle and have the part that unfurled to go over the horse's behind. But I always thought it would be cool to have an extra vinyl or Gore-Tex part that I could roll forward and put it over the saddle, but it would be all one piece so that, you know, I could cover the saddle with one part, cover the horse's butt together.
That makes very good sense. And make it two different colors so it's easy to find the front and the back.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That's a great idea. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Again, another one of those great ideas we have that we'll never do anything about and somebody else will steal it and make a fortune. Happens to us every time.
Absolutely. So, and then my biggest tip of all for riding in the warm, in the cold, and this is something kind of silly, it kind of goes into my product review a little bit. This is not a specific horse product, but this time of year, if you go to Target or Walmart or anywhere, they have all kinds of crazy fleece pants to wear to bed. And I discovered by accident when my rain pants had a hole in them, and that wearing my fleece sleep pants over the top of my breeches or my riding tights made me so much warmer because polar fleece doesn't really absorb moisture. It doesn't really get wet. The wet just kind of sits on the top of it. And even if it gets a little damp, you're still warm underneath it. And it moves around better. And so I started riding in my fleece pajama bottoms over the top of my riding tights.
That's very Walmart of you, Alice.
I know. It's very – well, you don't sweat inside of them. Like if you're wearing a pair of rain pants, a lot of times you end up sweating underneath them. So if you're not wet from the rain, you end up being wet from your own perspiration inside the rubberized tights.
Over top of, I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, I know a lot of people
do it
Because
that way if you get warm later on, you can just peel them right off. They've got wide legs. You don't have to take your shoes off. Usually you can just peel them right off.
Oh, yeah, because the sleep pants always have the giant bell-bottom kind of thing going.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, cool idea.
Well, I got to tell you, too, while we're on tips for things, you mentioned it before the show, and we've never talked about it on the show, but we might as well throw it out here. You said that one of your dogs was due for their monthly flea treatment, and I assume you use the drops. Is that what you – yeah, and you said that –
it's called Advantage Multi or something like that.
Yeah, you know, we have a greyhound and we have a cat, and we had a terrible problem when we moved in, and – so it was this constant battle to, and in Florida, you know, in the grass, because it's always so hot and stuff, we had fleas. So the dog goes out and lays and gets them. Well, we've been for years using the drops, and what we found is they were just totally ineffective here. Or, it, like in your situation, the dog would get 3 weeks in, and you have another week till you can give them the treatment again, and the fleas are back, and in that week, they're just miserable.
Yeah.
So that's what we found was happening is, well, ours, it just wasn't working anymore. So we actually went to, and it's a little bit more expensive, but boy, does it work. We haven't had a problem with fleas since. It's Bayer makes something called the Seresto Flea and Tick Collar, and it's Seresto, made by Bayer. And now this is $50 for your cat and your dog each. But the nice thing about this is it lasts 6 to 9 months. Now, on the can, it says 9 months. We've never gotten it to go 9 months, by the way. We've only ever gotten it to go about 6 months before it needs replaced. But it really does work. We haven't had fleas since we started using these collars. And I've never had good luck with collars of any kind before, but these things are incredible. They definitely come recommended by Jennifer and I. So if you're having that problem, so I know a lot of people get that problem this time of year. You might want to check out the Bayer Seresto Flea and Tick Collar. And this is not a commercial, just something that came up in our pre-show today when we were chatting. You really need to try it on that dog that has the biggest problems.
Yeah, I'm surprised that we have fleas right now because we had a really big cold snap not too long ago. And I thought, it was 24, 25 degrees for about a week. And I figured that I wouldn't see fleas for a while. And they were actually worse after they came, it seemed like they were worse after they came back, from the cold snap.
Right, right. Why don't we take a break for our song, and then we'll come back with Christy. Hopefully we'll come back with Christy here and chat with her about, you guys won an award. We'll find out more about that right after this. Let's hear from Dan Roberts with Can't Change Horses. We'll be right back.
Better look down that road before you get on. Turn around, take one last look behind. Hey, pick up a little dirt, run it through your hands, then carve your favorite memories in your mind. 'Cause all you've ever dreamed of was riding the rodeo. Before you learn to hold on, you gotta learn to let go. Your time in the saddle ain't as rough as life in between, and the fence isn't there for you to straddle, and you can't change horses in the middle of your dream.
And the fence isn't there.
Well, that was Dan Roberts with Can't Change Horses, and you'll find all of his music on iTunes. Just search for Dan Roberts. And now we have coming up our first guest. Why don't you introduce her, although I don't think she needs any introduction. She was just here on Tuesday.
We're going to be visiting with Christy Landwehr from the CHA, and I'm having her on to talk about an award that CHA gave to the North American Trail Ride Conference. They honored the NATRC for safety. Thank you for joining us today, Christy.
Yes, hi, Alice. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Christy, long time.
Yes, I know. I love it. I was telling Jen, it's fun to be on the other side of the fence.
Now you're in the hot seat.
That's right.
I know that Mary Anna Wood accepted the Certified Horsemanship Association Safety and Partnership Award on the behalf of NATRC, but I'd like you to tell us some more about the award and how it was given.
Absolutely. We, Certified Horsemanship Association, gives out numerous awards every year, and our Partner in Safety Award has been given out since 2002, so quite a few years at our annual conference, at our awards banquet, and it most of the time goes to an organization that CHA believes has a similar mission to ours, which is safety and education. And this year it just seemed like it would make perfect sense. I had gone to the NATRC convention last year in Oklahoma and had met everyone, and boy, did I like that convention. You guys put on a great convention. And everyone cared so much about safety and so much about education while they're out on the trail, you know, the different obstacles that you have, being judged, the fact that you have to check and make sure that people are doing things properly in their camps with their horses as far as trailering and grooming and tack fit and all those things that you do, that it just seemed like an absolute no-brainer. So we were thrilled when our board said that they would love for NATRC to receive our Partner in Safety Award. So that's what we were able to do this year.
Well, thank you very much. That was very kind of you guys to think about us that way. Tell us some of the other things that go into choosing a recipient of this award, and who are some of the other people who have received the award in the past?
Absolutely. We have a criteria in place that goes out to our judges, and every year we have different judges. We normally have one person maybe from our board, one person that's kind of a member at large, one person that might be a regional director or state or provincial rep for us. And then we normally have one or two people that are actually not members of CHA that also look at the paperwork, that kind of concept that they can see the forest for the trees that way. And so the five people looked over some of the other ideas for Partner in Safety, and they felt that NATRC were definitely the ones that should have won it this year. Some of the winners in the past have included Julie Firshman. She's a well-known lawyer in Michigan, and she's written a lot of law books and, of course, really believes in the safety of the industry. We have also had Riders for Helmets, and I know Lindsay White has been on the Horses in the Morning show, and Lindsay does a show herself, and so that's been great. They're obviously a very safety-conscious organization as well. We've also done American Camp Association. They run all the camping programs around the United States, whether they're YMCA, Boy Scout, Girl Scout, Christian camps, and they really care about their safety, not only for their horse programs, but of course now we're talking rock climbing walls and swimming and canoeing and all the other things that you do at a traditional camp. So those have been some of our past winners, and so now NATRAC is right up there with some really good people and organizations.
Wow, that's amazing. That's really cool that you guys give an award like this every year, because I know that safety is a huge thing in the horse industry, or it should be, because horses are big animals and people can get hurt easily, and you know it's important to always be paying attention to safety.
Well, what we love this year was Mariana Woods has been a longtime member of both CHA and NATRC. She's the one that, of course, had Elmer, her competitive trail horse for years, her Arabian that didn't die until he was in his 30s, and she had logged so many miles on him that to be able to have her receive the award on NATRAC's behalf at our CHA conference just made such good sense, and that was kind of the icing on the cake to be able to have her do that. Just the fact that she's so involved with both organizations. She's clinic staff for us, so she trains a trainer for us. So to be able to have her do that was wonderful.
Well, I know there's some other Natrek riders that are also into the AM that are in CHA as well. There's an instructor in Oklahoma named Cheryl West, and she's ridden a lot of NATRC rides, and I believe she's also an instructor for you guys. What are some of the things that people can do to get certified for CHA if they want to, to promote safety within their own practices and inside their own barns and things?
Right. Well, we have two different kind of plans. One plan is to go ahead and get certified by the equine professional themselves. So either the barn manager gets certified, or they accredit their facility, or the riding instructor gets certified. And then kind of the other side of it, we actually do rider levels as well. You have to be a CHA instructor to be able to award rider levels, but we have kind of a self-guided tour through horsemanship, our levels 1, 2, 3, and 4. And there's no CHA way to teach. We just kind of came up with, you know, level 1 is kind of your walk, trot, folk, whether it's on the trail or in the arena. And then level 2 is walk, trot, beginning, canter, and lope, again, on the trail or in the arena. And then level 3, now you're starting to do simple lead changes. You're going to be going over some jumps, perhaps. Maybe you're learning how to do some horsemanship or reining. And then level 4 is you're doing it pretty seriously. You're now doing some flying lead changes, lots of lateral work. You might be starting to show. You're maybe doing some cross-country type work. And as far as the trail goes, you know, you can do all the gates while you're out on the trail as far as walk, trot, canter, and you can also do a bunch of different obstacles like river crossings and going up and down steep hills, opening and closing gates, all those kinds of things that we encounter when we're out on the trail.
Hey, I got a question for you. On the western side, are you seeing any? Is it getting any better? Are people being more concerned about the whole safety, the helmet thing than before?
You know, I think so, based on area of the country. I think we have this wonderful divider, Glenn, in the country called the Mississippi River. And people to the west of the Mississippi River, like out here where I live, we're cowboys. We don't want to be wearing a helmet, right? And then people to the east of the Mississippi River, lots of fox hunting, lots of jumping, lots of those kinds of things. Even your western folk over there tend to be a little bit more open to it. That's what we've found. But I'll tell you, they're starting to make the helmets look better. I think that was a big deal, you know, and they're starting to ventilate them more, and they're starting to be more comfortable when people wear them. So I think you're going to see more and more of a change as the helmet manufacturers make the helmets better.
I got to tell you, there was an accident, a very sad story out of Florida here over the last couple of weeks. A 16-year-old girl riding a horse down in central Florida was killed. Her horse took off with her. Witnesses say that the horse bolted when she was out in the trail ride, and then the horse had a heart attack and died. And when they found, they were both dead when they found them, which is a very sad story. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, in the one story, it indicated that she was not wearing a helmet. And then the part that, you know, that obviously things happen when you have horses, and that, you know, you can do the best you can to protect yourself from those things when they happen. But what really got me was they had a ride in honor of her, about a week ago, and all the pictures I saw, there were about 100 and 120 people there. All the pictures I saw, I'd say 3 or 4 of them had a helmet on. So here we are coming out to, you know, to honor this girl who died in a horse accident without a helmet, and none of them had helmets on. And it just hit me really hard. I don't know why that hit me so hard. It was like, wow, you know, are we going to learn as a culture?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'll tell you, though, some people go even the next step. Like, they're starting to wear the safety vest now and do things like that. You know, so you kind of have
broken ribs
both sides
hurt.
Of the fence. Yeah, they do. Yes, they do.
That's why.
But speaking of the safety vests, I've been seeing a lot of, I've been seeing on Pack of the Day a few weeks ago, they had those inflatable, one of those inflatable safety vests on for sale.
Yep.
It was on sale for half price was $400 and something, I guess. So they're kind of pricey. But my vet is an eventer, and I was talking to her about them the other day, and she said that she still just wears the regular one because once you deploy one of those vests, then they have to be sent off to be refitted. But that they're really cool. if you come
now
loose.
Now, that I have not heard that before. We know a lot of people. I have actually worn them and had them deployed on me, and we had it back to operating in about 2 minutes.
Okay, well, maybe there was another. Maybe it was an older one that maybe they've changed the design. I don't know, because we were just talking about it.
Yeah, eventers do it all the time. They get off their horse, forget to unplug, and
right.
and they end up, they just put a new cartridge in, and then they're back to riding again. So I don't know which brand she was talking about, but that's not the case with most of them. Yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of, you're right, Christy, there are a lot of riders in multiple different kinds of disciplines. Endurance riders are starting to wear them more often now. And especially, you know, people who have had broken ribs in the past or have had chest injuries or back injuries are starting to wear them. And they really do work. Boy, they have saved a lot of eventers, a lot of broken bones.
Yes,
wow,
absolutely.
Cool.
They aren't cheap, though. You're right. They aren't cheap. But then again, the hospital visit for broken ribs isn't either.
That's what I was thinking. You know, this is bad to have the broken ribs. When I was training Liberty, the very first time I fell off of him was well into I've been riding him almost a full year, which is unusual when you're training a green horse. You know, you usually come off sooner than that, but I was pretty proud. But he spooked at something, I have no idea what, and I came off and cracked, I like jammed my ribs. It was like, you know, and they still hurt. And that's been 7 years ago. You know, I just every time, and then I'll move a certain way. And I've often thought about getting one of those vests because of the, because of the safety.
Jennifer still has, she had her horse step on her chest, actually. She was just leading the horse in, the horse tripped and fell on the aisleway. It was a cement aisleway. The horse tripped and fell on the aisleway, and she ended up on the legs end, in between the legs and feet. Ended up having a 14 staples in the top of her head in the shape of a horseshoe, and the horse kicked her in the chest, and she still has a floating rib, because once they become detached, they don't necessarily do anything about it. So she still has one that floats around. She can actually feel it move. So it's, yeah, isn't that great?
Well, I'll tell you, the safety vest in the winter, they just add another layer of warmth. So actually, if you live in places like Colorado and you're riding in the winter, you know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, this is an extra layer of warmth and protection. This is all right, actually.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. And, of course, you know, most of the exercise riders and jockeys and everybody wear the vest now, too. I mean, they've figured out that less broken bones is better.
Yes.
And the vest, and, you know, if you just get the vest, they're not that expensive. The airbag ones are expensive, but if you just get the vest, they're not that expensive.
And they'll last a long time, too, if you take care of them.
Right, exactly. And you want to make sure, too, that they're fitted. You know, with a safety vest, I would, if you're going to a show or an expo that has them or your local tack shop has them, make sure they fit them, because there are properly fitted safety vests and not properly fitted safety vests. So you want to make sure that they get fit properly.
Well, you're giving me a great idea, because we have videos, you know, on our YouTube channel, and we have how to properly fit a helmet, but we don't have how to properly fit a vest. We'll have to make that happen.
Yes, you should, because they are adjustable, and most of them are adjustable with Velcro, and you want to make sure that they're – and they also, the one you buy, you want to make sure the tailpiece comes down to the proper length, and it's just – there are some things that you should take a look at and have somebody, you know, that really know. Have an event store, probably an eventer store, be the one that shows you that, because they're the ones that deal with it the most. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, and you were talking about the vests being fitted properly. That goes for helmets as well. Know what it is about helmets, but like, you know, sometimes you put your helmet that you've always worn on and it fits just right. It usually fits, you know, you know how it feels. And then other times I'll put it on and it'll feel a little too tight or a little too loose. Well, but I don't know if the material shrink in the winter or expand in the summer, but I know that the day I went to put my helmet on and it was floppy and the pads are all in there. And it's like, I'm going to have to get another helmet. This thing's either stretched out or it shrunk or my head shrunk or something, because it's not fitting anymore. And, you know, if it's going to move around on your head, it's not going to protect your head if you fall off and hit your head.
You know, what's so funny about me, I have really thick, curly, wavy hair, and I actually have to have two different helmet sizes. When I straighten my hair, I go down almost a whole hat size. It's crazy. My hair causes a lot of growth on my head. So I actually have two different helmets based on if my hair is straight that particular day or curly. Most of the time I wear it curly when I ride, because, you know, you're going to ruin it if it's straight. So, and straight takes a long time to do. And it's a lot of pain and work and suffering.
Oh.
So, but yeah, but definitely to have, you know, different helmet sizes based on what you've done with your hair for some of us ladies is a huge deal.
That's funny. I don't have, I have straight hair all the time.
Yeah, well, if anyone wants to see, you know, that YouTube video does have for us how to fit it correctly, like the sliders having to go underneath the ears correctly and all those kinds of things, and how once you put it on your head and you don't attach it, you just put your head down, it shouldn't fall off without, you know, even without the chin strap attached. So, yeah, lots of things like that if anyone wants to go check it out.
Very good. So, what's the website again, Christy?
The easiest way is to go to chainstructors.com and hit on the video link.
Very good. Thank you, Christy, for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it. And Merry Christmas to you and everybody over at the CHA.
Thank you, Alice and Glenn. And congratulations, NATRC, once again, for winning our Partner in Safety Award.
Thank you very much. Have a Merry Christmas.
And, of course, if you missed Christy's episode, she was here on Tuesday with the CHA show and did quite well. So hop on over to horsesinthemorning.com, and you can catch Tuesday's episode, or just go on our app at Horse Radio Network, and you'll find Tuesday's episode with the CHA there as well. We're going to take another break for a song. I have a Templeton Thompson holiday song to keep you all going, and we're going to be back with another guest while Jennifer and I try to work out this last issue. So we'll be right back. I also wanted to mention that that we are going to be here tomorrow. It's the last really bad ads that we will be having, last really bad ads of the year. So get your ads in. We have a couple of great prizes. Go to Craigslist and look for the really bad written ads. Send them to us, and we just have a little fun with them on Fridays. It's everybody's favorite segment, and we'll be doing our last one tomorrow. So get your ads in today to Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com with really bad ads in the subject line. All right, Alice, your next guest is ready.
All right. Our next guest this morning is Mary Ashley McGibbon. sorry, I just butchered her name. She is the equestrian director of YMCA Camp Flaming Arrow in the Hill Country of Texas. And she, in the past, has owned and competed Appaloosas. Actually, she still has one Appaloosas. But she has newly discovered a love for the Icelandic horse and has a couple of those as well. And we're going to be talking about her horses and her competing in ATRC.
Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. How are you guys?
I got to ask before we get started about the camp name, because I picture disaster with the YMCA camp name of Flaming Arrow.
We have a very well-crafted, very top-secret industrial-grade Flaming Arrow that is utilized at certain points during the summer, but that's kind of a trade secret. So, you know.
Okay. I just pictured the disaster of all these little kids shooting each other with the Flaming Arrows. That's what I had pictured.
Well, that is not part of our curriculum. So,
oh,
yeah,
okay.
try to avoid that one.
Yeah, you know, you usually try and get membership up, not down. So I was kind of wondering how that worked.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, Alice, go ahead.
No, that's okay. I wanted Mary Ashley to tell us a little bit about what she does at her job at the camp, and then we talk a little bit about her discovering NATRC and her Icelandic horses. So what do you do at the camp? I know you have a million different hats to wear.
Well, I initially got hired to be the equestrian director, which is exactly what it sounds like. I came from the private camping world, which is a little different than nonprofit, as you might guess. But we serve over 1,000 kids each summer and about 3,000 people in our off season. And every single person rides, but just about everybody has an opportunity to. And we really specialize in teaching horsemanship through our five core values. And that's caring, honesty, respect, responsibility, and faith. So while I'm probably teaching a lot of the same stuff most beginner riding schools teach, we kind of try to teach it under that, under that umbrella of especially responsibility and caring and honesty and those kind of things. I take care of a herd of about 30 horses year-round. I own 6 of them. That is a lot of fun, and it's a lot of, there's always something, there's always a new vet bill.
You know, I gotta say, I've never heard of a YMCA having the horse thing. I've heard about it, obviously with Girl Scouts and all of that stuff, but YMCA is new to me. Is that something that's fairly common across the country I just don't know about, or?
You know, in Texas, I believe there are now only 3 camps that really have an equestrian program. It's certainly something that is not totally uncommon, but it's less common than it was. I mean, as you can imagine, it's this giant investment to run a horse program, and it's not like, as anybody knows, horses don't make a whole lot of money. But that's just, it's something our Y has decided is really important, and it, definitely appeals to the demographic here in the Texas Hill Country.
Gotcha. Okay.
So how did you become interested in Icelandic horses?
I had ridden one or two kind of, knew somebody that had one and hopped on for fun, and I had a bad accident a few years ago on a different trail class kind of thing, and was trying to get back into horses and was looking for lessons, and Googled Icelandic horses, and this phone number came up that was a local area code, which was bizarre because there's very little in our area. And this woman had moved in close to me who had Icelandics, and I asked if I could take some lessons. And she said, absolutely, in the fall. This was in the middle of our crazy summer. And then she called me back about a week later and said, do you want a horse? I have one for cheap. And I was like, well, I'll try him out. And that's how I got Toto. His name is actually Toby or Torbjorn from Rhythm Hill, but we call him Toto. And I just sort of got him, and he'd been broke at the age of 10, and he was 12 at the time, and we just sort of rode everywhere and then went and tried to make track that fall.
So you, but you did your first NATRC rides on another horse.
Yes, I did. I'd been riding an Appaloosa for about 2 years at that point. And he was just, he's older and he's kind of out of commission for that. He's got a shoulder injury. So, you know,
so
it was
a
big change.
How was riding Toto different from riding Bandit?
Well, I'm a lot closer to the ground. But really, you know, the biggest thing that I see trials going for them is a, you know, the gates are great. Neither of my horses gate beautifully, but they have a, for the most part, a calmness and a sensibility, and they are very, you know, other horses may react to them, so they look a little weird, but they get along with other horses, and I found that my rides just got a lot more fun. I wasn't stressing out the whole time about, you know, this kind of hot-headed horse that was going to teeter me off a cliff. You know, I really got more time to enjoy the ride. On a horse that kept up very well. You know, our challenge here in the Hill Country is certainly heat and humidity. So we have to be selective about where we go to ride. But, you know, when we get a chance to ride in weather that's not 95 degrees, it's fantastic.
Well, speaking of the hot weather, what are some of the things you do to help him in hot weather? You know, what kind of maintenance things do you have to do?
Yeah, you know where I'm going with this. Maintenance is a really good word. they get clipped a lot. If I'm getting a horse ready for any kind of ride, pretty much in warm weather, they get clipped. In the summer, they're just as slick as any horse in my pasture, any quarter horse. So they're fine. As soon as the days start to shorten, like around Labor Day, they start to hair up. So I'm just very diligent. I do full body clips. There's a man in California named John Park who, you know, has an AERC horse that named Remington that I just kind of followed his protocol of clip the entire horse, do the best you possibly can for them. But that does mean, you know, when it warms up and cools down, I have to monitor blanks.
That makes sense. So how long does it take to body clip an entire horse?
The first couple times I did it, it was like a six-hour crying ordeal. But now I've gotten really good. I've gotten really good clippers, and I get really sharp blades, and I can do a horse in about an hour.
Yeah, that's the key. You've got to have good clippers. You've got to have sharp blades. You've got to constantly be putting the blades in the wash.
Yes. And Shoshin on the horse. I hate Shoshin, but that makes a giant difference.
What was Jennifer... Jennifer, Jamie came up with a concoction. It was half Shoshin, half something else. Do you remember what the something else was that she used?
It might have been baby oil. I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was something like that. It was half Shoshin, half something else, and then she sprayed it with a sprayer, and it gave the horse's coat just enough slickness. And basically what it's doing is just keeping your blades oiled as you go along. Instead of having dry hair, you're dealing with a little bit of oily hair.
I actually like clipping.
I like clipping my pony. It's just it's kind of fun and relaxing, and the ponies like it because it's
Let's qualify that. You like to clip your pony for 15 minutes before you hand the clippers back to me.
Yeah, I like it for about 15 minutes. See, that's the advantage of having a wife that will take care of everything else for you. See, that's the advantage. Yeah.
I have lured my husband into doing it a couple of times, and he's a good sport for about half an hour, and then he's like, this is totally your decision. I'm going to go climb on my naked Appaloosa, and I'll be fine.
So, well, I know that their personalities are really fun and endearing. Last spring, Mary Ashley had offered to let my daughter ride Toto. Wasn't it Toto? Wasn't it Toto? She was supposed to ride Toto at a Mary Ashley managed a NATRC ride, and Maggie was going to help ride Point. And she asked us before she went to bed to take care of the horse. And so, you know, just like we take care of our own horses, we fed him and we watered him and we took him for a walk and we tied him up. And the next morning he was gone. And he had at some point decided that I think we changed lead ropes because I didn't like the really stiff lead rope. I put a softer cotton lead rope on him, and evidently that was a problem. He untied himself and ran home. What was it, like 2 miles or something?
Yeah, so we were on this giant ranch we were managing at the time, and it was like 1 in the morning. As a ride manager, you don't sleep, and I was up and heard this very familiar whinny, and he galloped 2 miles down this pitch-black ranch road. No one was on it. I mean, you know, it was not that it was safe, but, yeah. And he never, like, untied himself before, so that was a new thing. It wasn't your fault.
Oh, you know what, though? Well, you know what, though? I have a song for that. You were that girl.
I don't want to be that girl.
You were that girl.
I'm pretty sure that I'm the one who tied the knot because I don't know. I can't tell you if it was me or Maggie, but our horses don't get loose. I mean, I
believe it.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who, when you hear that their horse got loose, you're like, oh, it was so-and-so, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Baylor Twine broke. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, my horses don't get loose, and it's like, I don't know what we did wrong, but needless to say, she did not ride that day. Didn't get to bring him back up. But actually, that's something else. Mary Ashley managed her first clinic and NATRC ride last year, and I believe she's going to do it again this year.
Yeah, I think I'm that crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what was it like being a first-time ride manager?
I think this year I will learn a little more about Occam's Razor and doing things the simplest way possible and not overcomplicating things, because that's really easy to do. But once those riders were out on trail, you know, the lead up to all of that was probably the most stressful thing I've ever done, to be honest with you. But we had a lot of, you know, with between work and the location we were having, and it wasn't NATRAC that was stressful, it was more like the logistics. But once those riders were on trail and you could provide that experience for someone, and this was a place where nobody had been for years and years to ride, that was the coolest feeling in the world. So, you know, the lead up was crazy. I'm way more excited to do it this year because I know a little bit more what's really important. I know what not to stress about. And goodness knows something is going to happen, and, you know, there will be a stressful moment leading up to, but it's really, really, really rewarding thing to do with your time.
Oh. Well, getting back to the Icelandic courses, I know we said the heat's been a challenge, but what's been your favorite thing about riding Toto?
Well, people's reaction to the breed, especially here, is very strong. And, you know, some people do recognize them for what they are and the fact that they're pretty displaced down here. And some people, you know, kind of getting back to the story about Toto ending up 2 miles, you know, to find his mom, they have a connection with people that is really undeniable. And I work with so many breeds of horses, and I love different breeds of horses for many different reasons, but their connection with humans, even people they just meet, is amazing. I mean, they are very attracted to people. They want, you know, to visit, and when people meet us on the trail or if I'm giving a talk or something and my horses are with me, it's this instant bond, and people just love to talk and connect with them. And I think that's something that's very special to the breed. There's lots of horses that love people, but every Icelandic I've met, for the most part, has got that magnetism and that love for, you know, for being social that is really fun. And everywhere I go, that kind of follows with them. I have another one that is named Crooner, and he's just the same way. And he's really good with kids. He doesn't do naughty things like end up 2 miles from camp or take kids through the bushes like Toto does. So he gets a lot of that experience with children, and, you know, they just feel like they have a stuffed animal, life-size Barbie dream horse because he loves their attention, you know, where even my sweet darling other horses can kind of be like, yeah, yeah, okay, kid, whatever, after a while, you know.
Well, you know,
that's definitely their best trait.
I know, too, I've known some people that have made the trip to Iceland and done the horse tour thing there. And they all say the same thing, is that they're the toughest ponies that they've ever been with, that they are just tough. They can go forever. They're perfect for the NATRC stuff because they just have stamina. They're just tough.
Yeah, absolutely. They will give you everything they have. They will not hold anything back. I mean, they feel like, I took one of my girlfriends out to ride them for the first time, and she had so much fun, and she said, I feel like this is a hybrid between horseback riding and four-wheel riding, you know, little four-wheelers.
That's a
you
good.
You just take them anywhere, you know, they'll go up anything, they'll try anything, and, you know, they're a blast. They're so fun.
Good analogy.
Yeah. Well, I know.
Ride the four-wheeler.
I really love Icelandics myself. When I lived in Kentucky and they were first starting to be seen over here, I would go to the Equitana expos and I would watch all those Icelandic demonstrations. And I made friends with one of the gentlemen who lived in Simpsonville, Kentucky. And so I was able to go and ride a few times. And the horse I rode, his name was Burger. And he would joke, he would say, well, he's B-E-R-G-E-R on a good day. And he's B-U-R-G-E-R on a bad day.
Yeah, the names are kind of tricky.
But now, where do you find them to buy them? Are there a lot available over here now, or is it still tricky?
It's a little tricky. There are some wonderful, reputable breeders. You know, the 90s and the early 2000s were certainly the heyday. They've hit the same slump a lot of, fringe horse breeds have, I think. But there's an Icelandic distance horse riders group on Facebook, and I've seen several horses that have come through there. I was actually found by a really kind woman in Colorado. I think it was through that group and an article I published about my experience with Toto, and she found me, and that's how I acquired my second horse. But, you know, the community of the Icelandic horse owner is relatively small. There are certainly people that still go to Iceland and purchase a horse. Once they leave Iceland, they're never allowed to return. But, you know, that's where a lot of the really good breeding stock does come from. But both of my ICs are American bred.
I'm taking a look on Dream Horse here. I wanted to see if there were any available, and there's only a couple that haven't been sold already.
Right.
There's one, and they do come in a multitude of colors, don't they?
Every single color except for apple. They can just be really bright.
Here's a little black one that's really cute. He's really cute. But they all have very funny names.
They do. Traditionally, they're all given an Icelandic name. That's very common. But because I work with kids, mine also kind of have code names. Because it's really hard to explain, like, Torbjorn to a child. So I call mine Toto and Denver, but they're actually Toby and Crooner. But traditionally, they all have Icelandic names, and, you know, most of them are from North, or a lot of them are from Norse mythology, which kind of makes sense.
They're really, really cool horses. Do you have a website for your camp?
I do. We are at, this is a long one, www.ymcacampflamingarrow.org. And our
website, you can just go into the hill country of Texas and look for the big mountain burning. That would be where the kids are shooting flaming arrows.
Yeah, that's totally it.
And if people want to come see the beautiful territory that you work in, they should come to your competition in March.
Absolutely.
Because it's a one-day clinic. The Saturday's a clinic, right? Just like last year?
Mm-hmm.
And then Sunday's the competition. So it'd be a great place for people who have been listening to the show that want to give it a try to come and give it a shot. What are the dates for that?
It is March 20th through 22nd, I believe. It's that weekend. I think that's the Friday through Saturday. And let me tell you, I have to give a shout-out to Marilyn Johnson of Kansas last year, who drove all the way down for the ride because she couldn't find a clinic up where she was. So that was a real treat, and we certainly welcome folks coming from out of town, and, you know, we accommodate, you know, whatever stay you need to do as best as possible. But it is a really nice way for people to kind of dip their toes in the NATRC without committing to a full-day ride, and you get a great day of hands-on learning with people that I want to learn from and that I want to emulate, some really, really, really good riders. So that would be great to see as many people there as we could.
Thank you so much for coming on today. Merry Christmas. I hope you guys have some good time off and some fun stuff planned.
Well, Merry Christmas to you guys. Thank you all for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Enjoy the ponies on the holidays. Get a ride in.
Yes, sir.
Thanks, Mary. Well, that's cool. I didn't know that there were any YMCAs that actually had the horse thing. So that's cool. It doesn't sound like there are many, but in Texas, that she probably has a million members in that YMCA. So,
yeah,
she talks
near San Antonio. So it's
okay.
Well, not super near. I mean, it's out in the country, but that's the closest city.
Well, you know, we've had our share of technology troubles here today. We apologize for that, everybody, but we got through it. And we appreciate you, Alice, being here. What is the website of the NATRC?
The website is www.natrc.org.
People can check that out. And, of course, there's a listing on the website of all the rides that are coming up. If you also want to get out of a cold place like Kansas and head to Texas or Florida or someplace warm over the winter where there's a ride, then you can check out the website. That'd be the easiest way to do it. It's probably the smartest thing to do, too, is get out of those states over the winter, especially in February and March.
Absolutely.
Well, you have, Alice, you have a wonderful holiday as well. We'll be back here tomorrow with Janie with Horses in the Morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. It's the last, as I mentioned earlier, it's the last really bad ad, so get your ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. It's not the last really bad ads. It's the last really bad ads for 2014. It will continue in 2015 or people would revolt. So it's just the last one for this year. And we'll talk to you again in January, Alice.
Yes, you will. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody. And now, you know, to just add insult to injury, I can't even find the closing music for the day. So it's just...
Want me to do that for you, Glenn?
Yes, thank you, because I can't seem to locate it here. Thank you. Thank you, Coach Jen.
Yay!
Friday can't get here fast.